eventually I told her, well, nivolumab is going to be soon in the market. So why don't we give you what is our standard second regimen? And we had ramucirumab approved at that point. So she received docetaxel ramucirumab second line and then didn't really like losing her hair, really felt sick. It was very different than her, but she was also sicker. So it's always very hard to tell if it's the regimen that it's hard to tolerate or you're just sicker.
And what was going on with the cancer during
so
that time?
So she had, most of her disease was lung involvement, so she had more cough, more respiratory issues.
So just a word about docetaxel and ramucirumab specifically. It's been a little controversial because the benefits are relatively moderate, yet the toxicity, and documented here too, doesn't seem to add very much. I do hear, you know, a lot of times when it seems like when there's borderline situations, people think more about it in younger patients. Nesatumab is another example. This woman's out there trying to find out about trials. How do you make that decision about ramucirumab or not?
So I think it's going to be very much patient driven. And, you know, yes, for younger patients, I think we're all willing to take a little bit more toxicity risk because we think that they're otherwise going to be able to handle it without getting into too much trouble. It is some benefit. I mean, that's been shown in randomized phase 3 trial. It's a lot of extra cost. And that's one of my cautions around it. I think that the benefit is real, not big, but something. But is it really, you know, that additional cost? Is something I really grapple with patients. If someone's been on bevacizumab and seem to have benefit from it, I'm more inclined to think about having ramucirumab. Getting at that question of, if someone's been on bevacizumab, how long should we continue it? You know, practice in colorectal cancer and ovarian is different than what we do in lung. There's a trial that we're still waiting for results to look at whether we should continue it longer. So that's why I'm more inclined towards it. Actually, with docetaxel, I tend to give a weekly regimen of it, even with ramucirumab, which is, I know, not on label. But going back 15, 20 years, we had randomized phase 3 trials looking at the 75 milligram per meter squared every 3-week docetaxel versus several different weekly regimens, which really, from my perspective, seemed fairly equivalent. And when you give it on a weekly schedule, they often don't lose their hair. They don't have the same neuropathy. Well, the neuropathy is still there, but they don't have the neutropenia as much. And so it's just a better tolerated regimen.
And what happened with this lady?
She had chemotherapy with a lot of symptoms for about 2 cycles and then really didn't improve and didn't feel well. And by then, we had this discussion about doing another biopsy to find another target because she had those targets at the beginning, join a clinical trial, or now nivolumab was in the market. And then we had a discussion, maybe we don't need another tissue because we don't need to test.
Right.
But I did test her original biopsy and she had 0 expression. I don't know what that means 2 years after the fact. But at that point, she started nivolumab and really didn't improve. Like, she continued to have shortness of breath. We didn't know if it was pneumonitis. I told her, we really want to do this for at least 3 months to get a clear picture if you're going to respond. And we pushed, but she really didn't improve and progress in the brain. And then she progressed in the brain in the worst kind of way. She developed leptomeningeal disease, and that was really, you know, her personality changed. And actually, our relationship changed because she became more angry at everyone, her doctor, her family. So it was a very difficult thing at the end because she lost a lot of herself the way she progressed.
When you, at the end, after she died, and you kind of thought about the whole course, it sounds like the thing that happened at the end must have been very disturbing.
It was mixed feelings, because before she really started losing her cognitive function, she actually asked me if I wanted to inherit her dog. And I thought that was such a lovely gesture of, like, I was someone close to her. You know, I don't like dogs, but she was willing to give me her dog. So I felt like very satisfied because I felt like even in the midst of that, she saw me as someone who was so close to her that she would live something like it was her child for her. So that was very touched and tried to just have a lot of empathy and help her family, be available for her family because it was very difficult. I also had a lot of feelings about the next generation sequencing. I, you know, felt like we never really treated her with afatinib, which could have been an option. Although, you know, she researched it and I researched it and it didn't seem to have been the solution for her problem, but I wonder if there was something else that we could have found.
So just to pick back up on that, I was going to ask you, Heather, the 2 things that were found in next generation sequencing, one, this HER2 alteration, and then CDKN2A.